All right, the hour has come. How is everybody this morning? The final day of the SharePoint conference. Thought I would have a little music to get things started. My name is Jake Zabrowski, and I'm the Group Product Manager for Office. I run the Office 365 Technical Product Management team, and so we take care of things at the suite level for Office 365, including administration, management, deployment, onboarding, identity, and a multitude of other topics. And today we get to talk about change management and how we update the service and how we communicate to customers about updates. It's a really exciting time in terms of software delivery and what we're doing with Office 365. We've been dramatically changing all of our processes, procedures, engineering approach in order to deliver on this new model, which the benefits of which, with many customers that we've been working with, are starting to see. It's a pretty exciting time. So, how many people here are actually using Office 365 today? Oh, fantastic. Majority of the crowd. Good. How many people here actually started with BPOS? Oh, good. All right. Thank you for your long-term support of the products. So, this will be very relevant for you. So, today we're going to talk about a few different things. First off, we're going to talk about just generally the principles of the cloud, kind of level set on what our approach is, what our priorities are, how we think about cloud computing, and how that's relevant to how you manage the service in your environment, including the notion of what does it mean to be an evergreen service. Talk about a release cadence, our current release cadence. We're going to talk about customer feedback and interaction programs, because it's a much more dynamic world now. We're going to talk about how we're evolving change management, because there's some really exciting stuff we're going to announce today, including something called First Release. We're also going to talk generally about our release processes, so you have a little bit of insight into what we do in Redmond when we're sending new updates to the service. And then last, but certainly not least, we're going to spend a little bit of time talking about staying ahead of change. How do you make sure you're prepared for when things are changing in the service that's continually being updated? What are the primary sources of communication? What are the sources of truth? Where do you go to make sure that you're fully prepared to make sure data continues to flow, your users are prepared, and you're prepared for what's going to happen within the service? Sound like a good agenda? All right. And if you have questions during the session, please feel free. It is being recorded, so I ask either you try to use a microphone or holler really loud. I'll repeat for those that are going to be viewing on the recording. But do feel free to ask questions within the session. All right. So let's quickly start off with some of the cloud principles, and I'll go into these in a little bit detail. But number one, Office 365 is an evergreen service. Principle number one, evergreen means always up to date. Number two, everything we do is steeped in security, privacy, and compliance. There's one thing we do, and we need to make sure we protect your data that you've entrusted to us. And number three, providing you with a great set of configurable, highly scalable, highly available services. So let's go into a little bit of detail on those. So I mentioned security. I mentioned trust, security, privacy, compliance. This underpins everything we do. All discussions on what we build, how we build it, how we deploy it, we approach this very, very seriously. Governance, risk, and compliance is part of the process for how we just develop the software from the ground up. And so we're constantly working on that, and we've had some great sessions this week on how we deal with that within the process of actually building and deploying software. And I would suggest if you haven't, check one of those sessions when they're published on Channel 9 on that. Number two, we're building it as a highly scalable and configurable service. What does this mean? It's a little bit different model than what you've been used to if you've been using on-premise software. In the new world of Office 365, we have one version of the code running. And to do that in a way that's scalable and provides customers with a great experience and that evergreen experience, that means that you have to abstract a lot of the customizations and the ways you customize the products in the past away from the core set of capabilities of the service. That's not necessarily a bad thing. Actually, that's a good thing. That helps with some of the issues that we've had in the past with doing upgrades, like app compat, for instance. In place of that, though, we've got the new app model, which I know there's been a lot of discussion on the new app model at this conference. But we also provide you with an unlimited array of ways to actually configure the service. The reality is you actually have, in many cases, more controls and more configurations over the service in Office 365 than you do on-premise. And that's actually an area we're investing very heavily. If you haven't looked at it lately and looked at the admin experience, that's one area where we're continually adding more controls and more tools and more configuration options for customers to actually tailor the environment, manage the data, and have control over the experience of what's going on. So, let's get into a little more detail on an evergreen service and how this is different than the traditional deployment model. As you well know, in the past, we had a release cadence about every 18 to 36 months, probably closer to the 36-month mark. And we would go through a bunch of work, a bunch of engineering work. We would test it and vet it and work with customers and have TAP programs and RDP and whatnot. And then on a magical day, 3 years after we started, we would roll up the garage door and we would shove it all out and say, good luck, have fun, which you know was a huge amount of work. And a lot of stuff got buried in that process. So yeah, we had these waves. We called them waves. And if you were on BPOS, then you had the move from wave 14 to wave 15. And I'm sure you've experienced that with SharePoint or Exchange or other technologies. So we'd have these waves, and each one would build on top of the next. And there was a whole bunch of innovation that was just baked into that process. Oftentimes, due to the amount of work it took to actually upgrade, due to reasons like app compat or financial or whatever, many customers would skip one or two. The impact of that was very dramatic because you had now not just 3 years worth of innovation that you were adopting at one point in time, it was 6 or 8 or 12. And so you can imagine that the amount of disruption, both for IT and people managing the environment, but also for end users, was huge. The delta here was significant. The result of that was that a lot of process and a lot of usage of the software didn't really change from time to time because you're just getting used to the UI and trying to recreate the processes that you had. And so a lot of really great value and really great capabilities in the product were not taken advantage of to their full extent. Even look at the way we marketed and sold the updates to the software. You would have the top 10 list of updates in this version, when in reality there were hundreds if not thousands of updates in each of those waves. And so people continued to use the software in the ways they had, and maybe they would adopt a few new things and tweak things and improve things a little bit here or there, but there's a lot of stuff that was buried in there that just wasn't taken advantage of. I can't tell you how many times I've met with customers and talked through your capabilities in the product, and I just show them things that we've actually had in the product, whether it's Office or SharePoint or Exchange, for 3 releases or 2 releases, and they're like, wow, that's in there, right? That was kind of the situation we were in. So, going forward, what's different? We're moving from the model of waves to what we're calling ripples. A continuous set of changes. So we actually are now releasing updates to the service, new capabilities, every month. And it's not on a specific day of the month, but every month new capabilities and new updates are being released to the service. These are small, mostly incremental changes. These aren't the huge disruptive changes, and I've heard from some folks that they're very trepidatious about that because they're so used to that old model where they were adopting just a massive amount of change at one time and it was horribly disruptive. This model, for the most part, is not as disruptive as the last. Small tweaks, small updates, incremental changes. And there's twofold here, the benefit of that. Number one, it's not all coming at one time, so you don't have this monumental task of rolling this out and updating everything. But number two, you actually are aware of all of those updates and that you have an opportunity to get in front of it and train end users and start to adopt some of the new value that we have in the product. And so instead of those big, huge stair changes, you now see small little ripples as they go up and the service improves. In just talking to customers, we found that this has actually been very beneficial, that the ability actually to take advantage of this stuff has increased dramatically and people are pretty excited about it. So for those of you who have been on Office 365 or starting with BPOS, you were used to a process still, even with BPOS, of these big wave releases where we moved you from BPOS to 14 and 14 to 15. There's a significant and very fundamental change that happened when we moved to what we called wave 15. Wave 15 of the service was the first time we actually built cloud first. Every other time we built the service, it was actually on-prem first, bring those capabilities to the cloud. We completely flipped the model. We completely changed all of our engineering processes. We completely changed a lot of architecture in the product. to be cloud first and build cloud capabilities and optimize for the cloud and then bring a lot of that on-prem. We're still bringing it on-prem, as we mentioned in the keynote on Monday, that we just released Service Pack 1, and we're going to be packaging up and having a new version of SharePoint and Exchange and other products coming out this next year. So we're still doing that, but we're building for the cloud first. So that has some interesting implications. That means, though, that there won't be those big wave upgrades. And I know for folks who have been on the service, that's probably like a hooray, hopefully. No? No response? All right. Yeah, you can clap for that. It's okay. One of the things that I like best about this new model and working with Office 365 is that the relationship between Microsoft and the customer is so much closer. You know, I've worked in product management with engineering teams for a long time, and you know, we work with customers and hear feedback and try to improve the product for customers. But for the most part, you know, like I said, when we had this release model where we opened the garage door and shoved it out, that wasn't that far from the truth. And customers had to make up a lot in terms of actually making it work in a real world environment. You know, now the same engineers who build the product, run the product, manage the product, we have a direct connection with customers. It's an ongoing relationship. You know, it's a subscription, so you know, at any point in time you can say, I'm done, theoretically, right? And so we have to make sure that we're providing you continuous value. So we hear and listen to customer feedback, and we respond much quickly. That's one of the you know, really key benefits of this Ripple model. Instead of having to wait 3 years or more to hear your feedback and implement it in the product, we can actually do it in a month or a couple months or you know, a much shorter time frame. We've got some specific examples of things that we've done. You know, one piece of feedback we got, and I think something we'd heard for a long time, was the ability to use rights management on documents outside of Office document types. Right? Direct customer feedback, you know what, we have way more than Office documents. We have PDFs, we have image files, we have music files, video files. We want to protect all of that, and so that's something we added to the service. Another example, you know, through Send a Smile and other customer engagement programs, we've done things like change the sharing model in SharePoint. Right, to allow more end-user flexibility in that model, and that's directly from customer feedback and changes, and we're iterating on that very rapidly, adding things like the ability to see shared with me. Right, that was a direct feedback after we changed the sharing model. Hey, wait a minute, people are sharing stuff with me, and I don't know where to go to find it. I have to go to email or you know, search for it, so we added the ability to you know, help them find that information. These are based on customer feedback, directly seeing how they're using the product and hearing back from customers. And last but not least, you know, working with the community of folks, getting additional feedback, and another example is the ability to set password expiration policies. Small things, but things that we were able to respond to very quickly. So we continually are you know, working with customers, understanding what they like, dislike, what they want improved in the service, and we're making changes, and we're prioritizing that. And there's actually programs available for customers who want to go deeper. You want to work directly with our engineers and help us vet new capabilities before we release them to the service. The program is actually fairly new. It's called the Office 365 NDA Preview. You get access to you know, pre-generally available code, as we're still in the vetting process, and I'll kind of show you how that fits on the timeline. You get access to the engineering teams, give them feedback. You know, there's obviously gives and gets. We want you to participate in the program. You actually need to give us feedback. You need to file bugs and whatnot. But it gives you early access to primarily end-user facing features in the service if you'd like to do that. You can use it within your production environment. You can pilot a subset of users, say like 20 or 50 users within the environment to actually see those changes and give us feedback early. So the link is there, and that's the website if you'd like to participate, that you can go there and sign up. There's actually a booth down in the Microsoft booth that you can go to and talk to the folks about this program there as well. So I mentioned that you know we moved to this Ripple model. And I wanted actually, this isn't everything, but just proof, you know, the proof is in the pudding. What have you actually done? Well, I think we've actually proven that we've made the transition from the Wave model to the Ripple model. These are just a subset of changes that we've made you know, since we did the last Wave release. And the amount of change and the amount of innovation in that time period is significant. And you can see a lot of things that are specifically based on customer feedback. You know, better integration with Yammer, a QA manager in Link, better reporting, increased directory synchronization, object storage. So a lot of really great things that we're adding to the service you know, all the time. So going forward, what are we doing? So change management and release of updates and new capabilities in the product is something that's evolving and maturing just like the rest of the product. It actually requires engineering. We have to build systems and tools and processes in order to do that. And so we are taking feedback. We've heard a lot of feedback. Like, you saw that slide with all the stuff. It's like, that's great. I need more time to prepare for it. I need more preparation. I need more information on it. So we've heard a lot of feedback from customers on that. And so we're building the processes in order to do that, provide you with earlier feedback and more control over change by communicating to you earlier on what's going on so you can be prepared. That's no small feat, right? We're in a services world where agility is everything and time to market is important, and we actually measure our engineers on their ability to get code completed code from their desktop, from their PC, to the service. And so, you know, it's a nice balance between responding to customers, innovating in the product, and then telling them what's coming in a way that they can prepare for it. So that's kind of the balance that we're taking. So we're changing some stuff. We're changing some stuff, and I think in really good ways. And it's absolutely a step in the right direction. So the feature release process has been evolving a little bit, and I'll show you what that looks like. Our communication policies, you know, providing you some more consistent ways to accept and understand what's going on in the service is updating. And also how we're disclosing roadmap. So we're in a new world where we can't depend upon, you know, us and our marketing teams developing a product feature roadmap and then giving it to our sales teams who then give it to partners who then deliver it to customers in a way that actually can accommodate for you to understand ahead of time. So we're going in a much more public way on that. All right, let's get into some details. Are you excited to see this? Oh, see, we didn't have, not all news was in the first day. So those of you, before I get into some of the specifics, I want to just give you some insight in how we look at change and how we look and categorize the different change types. So that way you can see, you know, we have a model and we're not just kind of randomly throwing stuff out there. The top half are what we call functionality updates. And there are two types of functionality updates. Functionality updates that are updates to existing scenarios, so existing applications, existing user experiences, existing apps within the suite. You know, examples of that would be, you know, the OneDrive for Business storage increases, UI change that we've made. I have the code right up there, so I've got to change that. So just existing scenarios, and this would probably be the most user impactful type of changes because this is what might evolve in terms of the user experience. The second are new introductions, and I think you probably noticed that we've been introducing a lot of new stuff, and we're working on some really exciting new. Completely new applications and services like Oslo that we saw on the first day. So more and more of that's coming from Microsoft. That's really exciting stuff because, you know, although we've released new applications, not on the scale that we're doing it currently. So we have a category called new introductions. These are things that are not going to interrupt the current user flow. They're not going to change the work behavior that people have currently or the policies that you have in place for how people should use the software. It's additive to the service. So you have the opportunity to adopt it, whether it's a new mobile application or a new service within the suite, that's your choice to take that and adopt it within your environment. Then the bottom half are things that we call platform changes. And these are improvements that we're making a lot in the infrastructure of the service. The first and the one that obviously people are most concerned about is what we call disruptive change. And that's a scary word. And we put it there on purpose because we take it very seriously. So disruptive change, and I'll show you the disruptive change policy that we're governed by, that we promise to you we'll abide by, has to do with continuity of the service, that data continues to flow to the service. So when we make changes to APIs, when we deprecate a set of capabilities, when we change things or things are evolving based on the system requirements, those would be considered disruptive changes. The wave updates we used to do would be considered a disruptive change. We also have some things that are not as disruptive and don't require as much lead time and as much work on your part, but do impact you. And those are just smaller changes around configuration. You need to have a small auto-discovery change, a small DNS change that you need to do, and we communicate those to you as well. The last, but certainly not least, are infrastructure improvements. You know, we are constantly monitoring and managing the service, doing security fixes, bug fixes, managing the hardware, managing the network infrastructure. We're doing this on a regular basis, and it's stuff that's just happening in the background. Does that make sense? So, first release. So one piece of feedback we've heard from customers is, I need more time to consume these updates before they come to the service. And for some customers and partners, they've said, give it to me as soon as you have it. Right? I want to raise my hand and I want to say, I want to be in the front of the line and give me those innovations as soon as they're available. And people have really just bought into that cloud model. So we created a new program that's not yet available, but it's coming soon, called First Release. And it's an opt-in program. Everybody will be out by default, but you have the option to opt in, and I'll show you what that UI will somewhat look like. You can opt into the program, and your tenant then will be at the front of the line to receive new changes. The changes that we're going to put through First Release are changes that are in that end-user update model, so features that impact end users. Again, we're evolving and improving. This is going to start with Exchange and SharePoint features, and we'll be adding other services to that. So end-user impacting changes for Exchange and SharePoint will go through this program first if you opt in. If you opt out, you'll be in our standard release process, and you'll have a little more time to consume that change. First Release is fully supported, fully documented, fully vetted code. It's not a pre-release program. It's not a tap program or feedback program. It's actually just a, I want to be in the front of the line. All right, let's explain how that works. So one other point I want to make here. So this does not include those new product introductions. This only includes updates to existing scenarios. It also doesn't include the marketplace apps and others, as we look in the future. So this is an example. It's a mock-up of something that we're building. We're actually in the process of building it. I think we probably actually have some code now, but it's in a development server. Don't have access to it here. So by default, everybody will be off. You can go into this page within the service settings and choose to opt in, turn it on. When you turn it on, within 24 hours, that change will actually start to flow. The new updates to the service will go through First Release. You'll be at the front of the line. If you decide, I need to slow down a little bit, you turn it off, and within 24 hours, we'll respect that again. And then we won't take anything away. Everything that you've had in the service to date will stay, and then future updates will come at a little slower pace. Any questions on that? Yeah, question in the back. So the question is this First Release program for the entire enterprise or the entire tenant, or is it just for a subset? The First Release it's a great question, is for the entire tenant. So this is an opt-in for tenant-wide updates to the service. We've actually heard another piece of feedback from customers and partners and others like, I want to see some of it first. I don't want necessarily to be in an NDA engineering feedback program. And so for those customers, you can actually, if you choose, get a second tenant, opt it into First Release, see those updates first, and then have your main production environment in the standard release process.
This is no more than 30 days, though. I mean, basically, if we didn't sign up for it, we would get it in the update within 30 days.
Great question. The question was around what's the time frame or how long is it 30 days between when we released a first release and when the people in standard release would get it. I'll hold that question. I'm actually going to talk about that right next. Okay? Any other questions? Does that work? Sound good? Yes. The question is, do you get any notification of something that's happened as a result of signing into this? So basically, you want to make sure that one of the admins within the tenant isn't just randomly setting that feature. It's a great piece of feedback. I don't know if we have that feature in there yet, but I will take that back. That's a really great piece of feedback. All right? Okay, let's get into the timeframes. So I think you will all respond well to this because this is the life for those of you that are in Office 365 today or living now. So to give you a little insider view into how we release. So I think this is different versions of this have been in different sessions, but we obviously go through a process of vetting everything we do before we release it, and I mentioned that security, privacy, compliance are core. We go through dogfooding programs where we're working on the features, and we have customer feedback programs where we're vetting the features and making sure they're high quality and there's not no bugs in the software. We actually deploy everything through MSIT before we go out in the wild with those capabilities. And that gives you Microsoft a really good idea of scale. It gives a good idea of a large, diverse user base, because Microsoft, we have about 100,000 full-time employees and about another 50-plus thousand contractors who all get access to the service first, so we get some real-life feedback. Then we run it through that NDA preview program, so that program that I mentioned before that you can choose to participate in today, and then we release. And I'll be very frank, I think we haven't done a good enough job of communicating to you ahead of time. There's been a lot of stuff that just, it showed up. Oh, great. That's exciting. I have to go now change all my processes and how end users actually use the software, right? And so that's where, going back to the communication and time frames, that's one of the things we've really been trying to solve for. We know that's not been a really great experience for customers. So what is it going to be going forward? You know, as we released first release and some other capabilities as part of it, we're introducing a little bit of more time within the process, a little bit of lag in the process. So we have a couple things, and I'll go into the roadmap shortly. But first off, we're going to notify customers, and we're talking right now about the end user impacting features 7 days before we release it, period. Like, imminently, this update is coming to the service, and in 7 days, we will start the process of rolling it out to first release customers who have chosen to opt into first release. So you'll get at least a 7-day warning before it comes to first release. You'll actually get more, and I'll explain that with the roadmap stuff. We make it generally available. We start the first release rollout. A minimum of 2 weeks after we do the first release, we will start the standard release process. The reality is it will most likely be much longer than 2 weeks. That, you know, our engineering teams can take a little more time in that process, and that the process of actually releasing through the standard release, because that's going to be obviously the vast majority of our customers, just takes time. And so, you know, it could be as soon as 2 weeks, but it could be as long as a month, or potentially even a little bit longer before that feature shows up in your production environment. One of the things that we're working on, but it's actually a really, really difficult engineering problem to solve, is ability to say when a specific feature will show up for a specific customer. Because of the way we, you know, this scalable global service is built, like actually knowing exactly when it's going to show up for Sally with an ABC corporation is really, really tough engineering work to do. But we would like to get there at some point in time. So we're giving you, though, good notifications in more predictable time frames. And predictability is one of the things we're really trying to focus on here. So, you know, that's one tool, that's first release, to help you stay ahead of change. So I want to talk a little bit about, you know, how we communicate to you and how we're evolving that as well, where the sources of truth are for information that you should be consuming to make sure you're ready for this. Because first release and the communications we have about imminent updates to the service is not the only way you stay up to date. We actually have tools much further in advance to give you a longer range view of what's coming. So today, we obviously have the Office 365 system requirements. And you should know those very intimately. If system requirements, you know, are something that you looked at the back of the box or whatever, you looked at the release notes, what are the system requirements for this? I'm going to go deploy it, and then I'll walk away until the next time we talk about a release. System requirements are you know, they don't evolve very fast, but that's the one of the big tools you have to understand how you need to evolve your on-premise environment, your user desktops, to make sure that you're going to maintain service continuity. And so as you're planning for work on app compat and updates and user experience changes, knowing when the system requirements and how they're evolving and shifting and when changes are coming is a key way to make sure you stay on top of that part of the service and it's not a surprise, you know, at the last minute. We also have our lifecycle policy and disruptive change policy. We talked a little bit about how we classify disruptive change. I'll actually show you what that policy is and point you to it. It's a nice check in the system. And we also have currently the Office 365 technology blog. Anybody here consume the Office 365 technology blog? Two people, three, four, five, okay, a little few more, all right. I'll have a link to it in the deck. We'll talk a little bit about it. I'll show you what it looks like. So that's how we communicate today. And, you know, there's release notes here and there's UA articles there, just kind of random smattering of stuff, not really predictable or easily consumable. So we're changing this up a little bit. We're adding a public roadmap, 30 to 90 day roadmap, that will be public on a website anybody can consume. And we're also making significant enhancements into Message Center, and I'll talk about that shortly. So, quickly going back, your system requirements and our lifecycle policy, again, is your long-range view of how you need to evolve your environment on-premise, whether it's browser, client, Windows, et cetera. Generally speaking, you know, we have a pretty, we try to be as supportive as possible of supporting older environments. You know, as the technologies are changing, especially web technologies, it's harder and harder to do. So But you know, we want to make sure we provide the predictability and the ability to move forward without being disruptive and without making a huge amount of impact on you and the other parties and other software that you're using. So we have a really, I think, very nice policy around browser support. I think we're probably, in terms of productivity, we support all browsers. Well, not all browsers, but the major browsers. Safari, Firefox, Chrome, and obviously Internet Explorer. So you have your choice. And we try to, we really work to make sure we have parity across all of those experiences, which is great. So we don't hem you into one or the other. We also support any Office client and mainstream support. So that's the Office lifecycle policy 5x5. So anything that's in mainstream support, we support. If you're using Pro Plus, you don't have to worry about it because that's always up to date as well. We don't, when we do, when things do fall off the list, so say, an Office client moves to extended support, we don't block it. But we don't necessarily guarantee that all the capabilities, all the protocols, whatnot, work 100%, because we do have to move the service forward and continue to innovate. And so we won't block it, and we will provide you with detail on what doesn't work when and where. So say, gosh, we really have a hard requirement of using Outlook 2007, we'll let you know what doesn't work when and where. We keep the system requirements up to date. We have a change log on the system requirements, so you can actually continually monitor that as well. But that is your longer range view. Related is our disruptive change policy. And this is something actually we built to protect our customers. If we make a change that is disruptive, again, impacts service continuity, data flow, is a deprecation, we will guarantee we will give you a minimum of a 12-month notification. Reality is, like with things like system requirements, you have a much longer range view, but we will give you a minimum of a 12-month notification of that. And so that gives you some assurances that we're just not going to change things randomly. We did introduce the technology blog. And actually, let me see. I think I can pull it up here. As a way to help you stay up to date. Blogs are great. They're great for storytelling and giving people insight into what's going on. Not necessarily a source of truth for what is an update, what's the impact, how should I prepare for it, but it does at least give you some detail on what's going on in the service and what's happening, and that's been one of our primary vehicles to date. So the Office 365 blog, if you go to blogs.office.com, there's a lot of filters you can set up. I have it filtered here for Office 365 and updates, and then you can consume, and we publish those all the time before we update the service. All right, now let's get into something even more exciting, I think. But, I really like this stuff. Message Center. Are people familiar with Message Center? It's this little thing we built in the product. We've kind of been silently, adding more capabilities to it. So Message Center we're building as the source of truth for what's going on within the service. And today, Message Center's really been about communications around disruptive change, IE8 support, XP support, that type of change. We've been building a lot of infrastructure in the background, and now we're going to be adding a bunch of new capabilities to help you get access to communications around what's happening in the environment. So we're adding some really exciting things. Number one, we're adding the ability to communicate to you on updates. So when we talk about those feature updates, those things that will be a part of first release or going out to the service, we will communicate those to you directly in the product. We're also doing additional categorization of messages, sorting of message, ability to consume in different ways. We have tenant targeting. We're also going to be communicating to you about other things that are going on in the service besides just change communications and disruptive change communications. For instance, there have been instances where an ISP is having an issue. It's not an Office 365 problem. It's not a customer problem, but there's something in the middle going wrong where we're working with the ISP to figure it out, and we'll be communicating to customers those types of things as well for just general awareness. We're also going to be adding communications around what's going on with the account itself. You're about to expire, or new offers available, new promos, things like that you'll be able to take advantage of. So we're going to be evolving Message Center to really be a more robust communication platform. Yes, a question. Is it available on the MSIT tenant? I believe it is. Yeah, I believe it is. Yep. I think it's standard part of all of our offerings. So I'll show you what this looks like here in a minute. The next thing we're doing, and I mentioned this quickly, is we are going to be publishing publicly, I'll catch your question in just a second, a 30 to 90 day roadmap on the web. So we know that you want earlier access to know what's going on, and so we're going to publish on a public-facing website with a bunch of detail on what it is, and we'll keep that up to date, update it when things change, provide you screenshots, potential impact, things you can do to prepare. We'll also, you know, let people know when things are rolling out, through starting in first release or starting in the standard release program there as well, in addition to Message Center, but this is another source. Again, we have long-term through system requirements and lifecycle, midterm through the roadmap deck, and then near-term inside the product and Message Center. And so this will be going live within a month and a half is what we're targeting, where we're going to be publishing all of this for you to consume. And so we'll obviously be advertising the heck out of this so you can get access to it and see what the information that's going on. And this doesn't mean that we won't be communicating things longer term. You know, today we do communicate some things longer term, like when we announced our longer term roadmap for what were formerly called the web apps, now called Office Online. We did that about a year in advance. We made some announcements around things like MFA much longer in advance as well. So this is just providing you with some minimum guidelines, and we will, and in many cases, announce things much earlier. All right, so there was a question here. Yeah. Yes, currently, it's a good question. The question is, who is Message Center currently targeted towards? Message Center is currently available to tenant admins. One of the things we want to evolve within Message Center is actually the ability for different roles to be able to opt into different communications. That's a very, it's a complex platform underneath that allows you to, opt into different types of communications based on product, based on role, based upon access. So that's something that'll be coming. It's further out. It's much further out. We absolutely understand that because not all people who are responsible for managing change and rolling out change actually happen to be a tenant admin. It could be people outside of that role, and they would like to have access to those communications as well. So again, I want to make sure you have a really clear guidance on where you go for what information. So going back, this lovely colorful slide on how we categorize change, let's transition that into kind of the sources of truth for how you get the information. So those feature updates, end user impacting, of which you'll be able to opt in through first release to get the Exchange and SharePoint features. Message Center will give you a T-minus 7-day update. We'll do it on the blog as well, but Message Center is your source of truth. And the public roadmap, 30 to 90 days. New introductions, these are the new things that aren't currently part of the user flow, completely new experiences. We will be communicating those at a minimum at availability. Some of those are sensitive. Some of those will be communicating to you way in advance, like we did with Oslo. But at a minimum, we'll be communicating those to you at availability. And in the public roadmap, up to 12 months. Disruptive changes, we've talked about those already, but a minimum of 12 months. But in most cases, again, if you're monitoring the system requirements and lifecycle policies, you'll have a much longer view of what those changes are. The configuration changes, again, it depends on the level of change. I'll finish this real quick and I'll come back to it. 1 to 12 months, depending upon the level of change. And then the infrastructure improvements, again, that's happening constantly. And for the most part, it's really non-impactful. In those instances where it is impactful, like we have to actually do a planned maintenance window, we will communicate that to you a minimum of 5 days in the Service Help dashboard. We are going to communicate those in Message Center as well, but today, Service Help dashboard is the source. We're actually really working and building out the system to avoid having any of those maintenance windows any longer. Yep, good question over here.
Disruptive changes. So if I'm aware that I have to adopt my application, my client, whatever, because I'm not fitting in the changes but will come up in 12 months, how do I know when I have to deploy my update on my system? Because as you said, there's no way yet.
Yeah.
To get an idea, okay, my tenant will be updated tomorrow?
That's a great question. So the question was, those disruptive changes, whether it's a browser change or whatever, and I need to make changes to my application, how do I know when I actually need to turn my changes on? So I mentioned that the targeting of a tenant when they're going to get a feature update is really hard. The disruptive changes we do, we do have more of a switch mentality. So it'll be on a date when we will make the change. And it's not, a lot of those changes aren't hard changes. It just means you'll go into a little bit of a deprecated mode, potentially, like the client changes, whatnot. But we do give you a date and time frame, and I'll show you what those communications look like in Message Center. All right, so let's look at Message Center. This is a fancy demo slideware because this is really new stuff. I wanted to make sure to show it before it was actually in the product. So here we are in the admin console. One of the things we've added is, one, the ability to target specific customers with specific messages, so we can give you very tailored messages about what's going on in your environment, not just a generalized message. So that's part of what we've been working on. We've also worked on alerting. It's great that we have messages, but if we don't tell you that there's something new, it's like, I have to go just manually check it every day? Are you going to let me know that there's something changed? So we have now an alerting system inside the admin console to tell you that there's a new message and to take you into the message center. Once you get into Message Center, either by clicking on Message Center or clicking on the bell notification, you'll see we have new category types, and you know, these are still in work in progress, so it may not look exactly like this. But currently we have communications that are specifically around the disruptive changes, like the end of support for Windows XP and Internet Explorer 8. We're trying to somewhat align to an ITIL model and how we publish these communications so that it makes sense for, you know, standard change management processes. So we have a, you know, view all tab where you can consume all, and then we have additional tabs, one to avoid issues, which are those disruptive changes, things you need to do to take action on. Then we have the updates to the service as the next tab, and then we have those awareness communications, things like the ISP example that I stated. So those are the change types that are coming. We also have, you see the little icon, things that are really important that you need to take action on. This is an example of the changes, the actually communications that are in the service currently. So when you get into a communication, you link in, we give you a bunch of information, actions required, the date that the action needs to be completed by, what services are impacted, whether it's the suite or whether it's SharePoint Online or Exchange Online or Link Online. We categorize the change again. What date the communication expires, and then the publish date, just for you to keep track of when we published what. Yeah, question.
Would you have the follow-ups?
Yeah, the question is, will we have the ability to mark things for follow-up or assign actions or do other things within the message center? It's in the vision for where we want to go. But it's not, we don't have a time frame for that type of capability. More interactivity and being able to do different things with messages like that is certainly on the roadmap, and I'll explain how we're going to add that functionality in a kind of a roundabout way in a second. We also provide links to additional information. So if there's UA articles, support articles with more information, we will link you to more information within the message itself. Under the change tab, so again, you know, these are not as critical as a disruptive change, so, but there may be times where there are actions that you need to take, or we've given you some guidance on things that you may want to do to roll change out. In this case, you know, there's no action necessarily need to be taken, and we give you an idea of which services are impacted. So this is a lot of the infrastructure that will support being able to send messages out to the right roles. We tell you which service, we tell you any action that need to be completed, when it was published, and when the message expires, and then when you click onto a message, you get, again, additional information about it, potential end user impact. You know, this is just a mock-up, but we're going to provide you with, you know, as much information as we can around what the impact of the change is and what actions you may want to take. We have a vision for the future of where we're connecting some of the dots here, including the ability to connect this with tools and templates and content that will actually help you roll the change out. So kind of taking the next step forward rather than saying, all right, now go to our adoption center and find adoption content, actually linking you to that. Oh, hey, here's a great update, new storage and OneDrive for Business, actually providing you with access to those templates to actually communicate that to your end users if you so choose. Again, that's future. And to give you a little bit of a sneak peek on what we're kind of, where we're kind of going with this, number one, to the previous question on, you know, how do I assign different people to take different action? One thing that we're doing, is we're actually going to be providing a set of APIs on top of Message Center. It's actually the same API set we have for the Service Health dashboard. We're extending those to actually be able to access the data in Message Center so that you can consume this in your system management tool set, your change management tool set that you have. So the communication will be able to come in, then you'll be able to do what, you know, whatever processes you have in place if you do have a system like that. So you will be able to access that data. The second thing that we're doing is we're going to be extending the Office 365 admin app. So if you've used the admin app today, we publish service health information and communications on any or the major mobile devices, Android, Windows Phone, and iPhone. And soon we will actually be adding Message Center communications to that as well, so you can get those on the go and not just have to be logged into a browser to do that. Okay. All right. So we have a little bit of time left. Any questions? Yeah, a question in the back. Yeah, the question is around certifications. Like, I'm Office 365 certified, when I have one of the new certifications, how closely tied are the updates to the certification process so that you can make sure you're up to date with your knowledge as well? So, everything is changing about what we do, the way we market, the way we do certifications, and the certifications will be evolving with the product, and that in terms of staying up to date, you know, I don't know for sure, but I don't think we're going to be making you go back and recertify in any different time frame than you would normally. But you will be wanting to stay up to date with these changes, and the public roadmap and having access to the environment will help you do so. Okay. Another question? Yeah, the question is on the clients and offline and how clients evolve with it. So we actually have a very similar model with Office 365 Pro Plus, which is the subscription client. That's one place where we actually provide you with some opt-out capabilities or postponement capabilities just because it's a client and it's easier for us to actually manage that. And so with Office 365 Pro Plus, we actually stream updates to that in a similar cadence. I think it's actually closer to like every couple months rather than monthly. And you have the ability with Pro Plus to manage that and kind of control the pace of that a little bit. You can choose to, three tier options with Pro Plus. One is turn it on and your clients stay up to date with the service. Then let us do the updating. And the second option is I want to approve the updates before they go in. And then the third option is I want to not do the updates, but then I will comply with the 12-month policy and I'll take those updates within the 12-month period on my time frame and deploy them on my own. So we do that with the Office clients. If you're using something besides Pro Plus, then you just have to abide by the life cycle policy.
But is there anything in the admin that will tell me which of my clients have Pro Plus?
Which of your users, or if you're a partner, which of your clients have it? Yeah, it'll be in the licensing information. If you're licensed for Pro Plus, it'll show that your users have Pro Plus. Yeah, and one other area that we're investing a lot in is reporting. Reporting so that you have really good access to what your internal systems look like, how many users have which version of which browser, which version of which client, so that you can actually see that all centrally and so you don't have to go hunting or use other systems to get it. We're just going to provide you with that intelligence. Yep, exactly. Yeah. Question down here. Yeah, the Office 365 Pro Plus, the subscription client, does stay up to date, and we do stream updates to those on a regular basis, and you have some controls to manage that as well.
And will that also apply for OneDrive sync clients?
Yeah, the OneDrive Sync clients, I think they are up to date continuously now, although I'm not sure exactly any additional controls we'll have there, but those are up to date, kept up to date. Yeah. Question?
The API on the center,
yeah.
I
believe it's just a web service that we're going to be publishing, so you'll be able to access the data. I don't know about PowerShell. I will have to find out, and I can give you my contact information. I can give you the details on that for sure. We've been in kind of a beta program with the APIs for the Service Health Dashboard today. We'll be going live with that very soon for the Service Health information, and we're going to be adding, once we finish all the infrastructure work to start publishing the change management message in the next few months, then we'll start to add that data to the feed as well. Other questions, feedback, thoughts, concerns? Like, you just don't have to ask questions. You can give me feedback too. I'll love it. Okay. Question in the back. It's a great question. So the question is, how often will we be updating all the supporting content around the products for end users to stay up to date, whether it's helps or how-to or articles around the product? We are changing that process very rapidly as well. It's a little bit slower than the rest of the service because we have a hard requirement for localizing into 80 languages simultaneously, so it takes us a little bit longer to do that. But that's also, I think, important to note that the ripples are not as significant of quantity of change, and so you'll see very small tweaks that for the majority of users will not impact their current experience. And so although we are going to be evolving and changing on a continuous basis, the impact is not as high. And so a lot of those articles actually will just be fine for a long period of time, but we are evolving those and moving those faster, so we're actually working on ways to do more rapid localization of all that content, so we are providing it all the languages we support.
What is roughly the time frame between sign off of the feature by the engineering team until GA date?
Yeah. The question is, what is the time frame between sign off that something's ready and GA date? The thing that we're trying to measure, the thing that we're measuring in terms of code velocity is the goal. Now this is a goal, is to have code that's been approved, vetted, gone through security reviews, live to the service in 3 weeks. That's the goal. We know what's coming well before that, so we can communicate much earlier, but that's the goal in terms of code's ready, let's get it into the service. We don't want just sitting around. That innovation's ready, we gotta give it to our customers. Question back here, and then I'll come over here. Yes, that's right.
So it's great. What is the timeline for
release of first? Good question. What's the time frame for the release of first release and Message Center? They're actually happening simultaneously. We're going to turn on the UI for first release. Our hope is, and one of my engineering partners in the back is like, what is he going to say? What is he going to say? So we hope within the next 6 weeks or so we'll actually turn that on. We're not going to start pushing features through it quite yet because we actually need people to opt in before we have a pool of people before we actually push features through it. It'd be great to turn it on and push a feature through and nobody's there. Hey, welcome. So in the next 6 weeks or so we hope to turn the UI on for first release, and then within about a month after that we'll try to start pushing updates through that process. We're hopefully this helps you get control. And for folks that are partners, I mentioned all the Message Center content. I hope you've taken a look at the new partner admin capabilities to manage multiple customer environments. All the Message Center communications, all the change communications will be rolled up for partners as well. So you can actually access that and see what's going on in your individual customers' environments and what we're communicating to them as well. So that's a key part of it. Communication, control in the on-premise world and the old release model was you controlled through when the bits were deployed and when you gave them to folks. And in the services world, where things are evergreen and always up to date, control is really about having access to information early and being prepared and being in the loop. And so we're really trying to build the mechanisms to make sure you're really hyper-prepared with data, with the information, with the potential impact, so you can make, you know, good judgment decisions what you should do within your environment. But there's a question over here, or earlier, sorry, over here.
So we currently require the use of Kubernetes Explorer 8.
Yes. Yeah, good question. So the question was around IE8, looking for the information on what will not work potentially when the change for IE8 rolls out. To be completely frank, you know, we're in a mode of transition, right? You know, obviously we're kind of leading the charge with some other folks that are in the cloud space and evolving this model. But there's certainly a lot of software companies who are not at that mode yet, right? And they have, you know, in some cases, business models that are predicated upon the Microsoft update process, right? They'll sell you a whole new version when IE8 goes out of support, and that's their business model, or when we update a version of SharePoint. And so the models are kind of in a little bit of a tension today, and so that's causing some pain for customers. Like, I can't move because IE8, like, my apps that depend upon IE8 are not moving, right? And so we're looking at a few things. One, there may be some liberalization in terms of what we support and not specifically around IE8, so stay tuned for that. I can't guarantee, but we're looking at that. Secondarily, we've been working with the IE team, and in the next version of IE, they're actually going to bring the IE8 rendering engine to the next version of IE so that all those apps will be able to work in that compatibility mode in the next version of IE as well. So that's another option. In terms of the documentation, you know, we should have actually articles on that. So I will follow up and see if we are producing those articles on what will and won't work or what the experience will be like. And in the browser space, it's actually more around the HTML5 capabilities that we're taking some dependencies on. And it's a little bit different by product, but there may be some interactivity or some things like, you know, moving around documents to fill, you know, in a web app that, you know, may be just a little bit different in IE8. Is that helpful? Other questions? Yeah, question over here.
In the
yes.
The mechanics of that, do they just, if you get an affirmative, they set you up with a tenant? And
the mechanics of NDA preview. So if you want to be a participant in the NDA preview program, work with our engineering team, give them feedback, file bugs, similar to what we've had in the past with TAP programs. How the mechanics work is you go through process, sign up, sign the contracts, and then you're in, and then you can opt in. We actually have the ability to take a subset of users within your production environment and then turn them on for the preview capabilities. So if you want to have your IT team or a specific team with access to that, you can do that. Or if you want to say you want to create separate accounts for folks to be able to access it, you can. We want you to use it like it's real, so we get real feedback. But you can opt in, and I think they have some limits, say like up to 50 or maybe I think no, it's up to 100 users in your environment using those preview capabilities. Still part of the same tenant, so you don't have to do any, you know, setup of additional tenant and federation and identity work and app work there, so it's all in the same tenant. Yep.
Thank you.
Yep. Question here? Yeah, so the question is that, you know, I can be a participant in NDA and first release, and I can see different things and have it set up slightly differently. I can be an NDA preview and have it in my production environment to get super, you know, much earlier access pre-release, and then be in first release to get access to the production bits. You absolutely can do that. You can do both. The way we are actually, all capabilities that will be rolled out through first release will be in the NDA preview program. So you will get the earlier access there. We will have other capabilities that will be part of the NDA program that will not be in first release, like some of the new introductions, for instance, like the Oslo capabilities will go in NDA preview, but given it's a new introduction and it's not in the current user flows, it will most likely not be part of first release. Question here? That is a good question. So when you have people that are in NDA preview mode, and obviously people that are not in the same production environment, and you use something like a content master page update, whatnot, how does that impact all users? So a lot of the changes that will go through NDA preview, we're really working to make sure, one, we're not creating ragged experiences so that there's a lot of breaks between the people that are in the NDA preview and not. Some of those changes, like, won't be part of the NDA preview just because it would wreak havoc. Right, oh my God, our CSS broke, and it was NDA preview for everybody, even though not everybody was in. So some of those changes, they won't. We have some other mechanisms where we're going to be testing some of those as well and giving customers more earlier access to that.
But
we're working on the technical details of how we actually do it. Right, this is being just completely transparent. This is the really interesting, hard, exciting problems that we're solving. In the past, when you did TAP or your programs, one, we had strict contract language. You can't use these in production. Well, if you actually want feedback on something, now we have one environment, and it's a production environment. And we don't want to mess with your production environment. We don't want to create disruptions in your production environment. And so we're trying to create containers to give you early access and to give us access to your feedback in ways that doesn't really horribly disrupt the user experience or your environment, so we can maintain the SLAs, so you can maintain continuity, and so your business can continue to flow. All right. Other questions? Other feedback, thoughts? Things you would love to see? No? All right. Well, we'd love to have you participate in any of those preview programs. Keep giving us feedback, send us smiles, other programs. The folks that run our customer connection programs like NDA Preview are downstairs in the Microsoft booth, so if you are interested in more information and are actually starting the sign-up process, they're happy to chat with you there. Keep watching. Message Center stuff's going to roll out soon. We're going to continue to improve and evolve here and make it better for you and more predictable for you and for your users and your customers. So thanks for your patience. Thanks for being customers, and thanks for being here. Appreciate it.